From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we are, folks, enemies of the people, giving you an opportunity to share with us some commentary and thoughts about issues in the news media of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with my fellow enemies. That would be Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. And we have Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher emeritus now of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. And Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. How do to you all?
How do?
Why'd you turn on that microphone while we were plotting? We have four that's enemies right here with just enough. We used to say almost enough to be a minion, but that's a different.
Exactly. But Judy and I wouldn't know what to do if we were. So.
Nor would I.
Anyway, so speaking of our role here, folks, we need to start the program by talking about the rising tenor of attacks by the president, raising the ire of his supporters against the press. This is in the news somewhat because the president met with the publisher of the New York Times, A.G. Sulzberger, who tried to get him to stop making these attacks on the press, saying this is going to be dangerous, somebody's going to get hurt. And instead, the president doubled down on this. Where's this going to end?
Well, one of the things that could well happen is, and I expect it will happen, is that some, at least partially deranged person will attack a reporter and hurt them. We do know that it's already happened in at least one newspaper, which, you know, somebody came in, obviously mentally ill, and went after the people who were sitting there with guns. Basically, I think that the president is saying it's open season on reporters.
And this certainly the danger to reporters is real and getting worse every day. But this is also an attack on what we do and whether or not people believe the press. And what we as newspapers and radio stations and television stations do is so important to the operation of democracy. It's really stabbing that basic institution in the heart.
Mm. Well, there's so much to unpack. I mean, as you properly pointed out, Rex, the publisher of the New York Times met with Trump off the record, and there is some question in people's minds as to whether that was a good idea on Sulzberger's part. But and then ultimately it was Trump, not Sulzberger, who broke the off-the-record agreement, which led Sulzberger to release a statement in which he said, you know, it's one thing for Trump to be calling what we do as fake news. We can live with that, but it's quite another when this enemies of the people business is inciting people and putting journalists at harm. And the threat of violence is very real. We saw what happened the other night in Tampa when the CNN reporter was heckled. It's getting out of hand, and it's only a matter of time since there's a violent incident. I mean, I think the one that Alan referred to in Annapolis, I don't know whether that person felt he had license because of Trump. His beef seemed to be specifically with the newspaper. But nevertheless, it just seems to be only a matter of time.
Well, part of me was cheering on Sulzberger for going and defending and speaking on behalf of the press. But the other half of me is saying, I don't like it when newspapers meet privately with the president or with the mayor or with the governor. We're trying to be transparent here and to establish credibility. And if the public thinks we're meeting secretly with people, and I hate off-the-record conversations. And technically, I don't really even know of a publisher should be considered a journalist who
well, I was going to ask if you thought publisher is different.
Rules.
I do think publisher is in a different position, but there are transactions all the time between journalists and sources that are under the radar that are, you know, I will talk to you about this, but only if you promise not to use my name. You make off-the-record agreements, which we don't like. We have guidelines for how to do it and when not to. And you think that there should never be that kind of a conversation?
The problem is, this is a damn serious situation. It's so serious that new rules have to be written. And, you know, I would think Judy'd be absolutely right, because we do know that newspapers quite frequently lobby. They have to lobby. They lobby for lower taxes and tariffs and things of that kind. And that is suspicious because one would always worry that they would take it out on somebody who was not with them on what they were lobbying for.
Well, that should be transparent, though. I think you're that shouldn't be under the radar. Isn't that a little different, though?
No. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that Judy has a good point about her suspicions about this, but I think this is such an extraordinary time. I have likened it to early 1930s in Hitler when he's identifying subjects who need to be dealt with. And I think Sulzberger probably did the right thing here.
You notice that Dean Baquet, the Times editor, chose not to attend that meeting for just the reason that Judy is citing. It just didn't seem appropriate for an editor who is responsible for news coverage to sit in on an off-the-record meeting.
Right. He was accompanied by the opinion pages editor, Jim Bennett, but not by Baquet, who runs the news operation.
Right. For the record, I think it's valuable for a reporter working a story or working a beat to occasionally go off the record, but it's got to be for certain rules. You know, the person has to have real information. It has to be very important for the public to know. It has to be discussed with the editor. I mean, there are established rules about this, but you just don't go off the record.
But you know, Judy, this is not off the record, on the record stuff. This is, as Rex has pointed out so profoundly, an attack on the First Amendment of the United States Constitution and basically strikes at the heart of our democracy. So basically, when A.G. Sulzberger looks at the president and says, come on, man, cut this out. This is really dangerous. I think it's justified.
The difficulty is that, well, among the difficulties, there are many of them, as we're all saying around the table, the reporters are doing what they have always done in the face of other politicians. The difference is that Trump is unabashed about his behavior. He has made, according to a tabulation by the Washington Post fact checker, 4,229 false or misleading claims in office. That's an average of 7.6 a day. And it is increasing, according to Glenn Kessler, who does this, is the head of this team for the Washington Post. When they first started tabulating it, in his first 100 days, he averaged 4.9 false claims a day. In June, July, he averaged 16 false and misleading claims a day. So the press takes note of this, holds him to account, and he accuses us of fake news. His echo chamber, Fox News, backs that up and gets even worse with Hannity of Fox News, who then embellishes further and goes deeply into absolute fabrication. And a certain percentage of Americans who watch Fox News believe all of that and attack all of us. I get emails every day from people who clearly are Fox News viewers who are attacking us for being part of the fake news.
And then you have Sarah Sanders, who gets up to the podium at the press briefing, which is supposed to be a daily press briefing and has been anything but. And she's got that snarling, sarcastic, sourpuss demeanor about her, also telling direct falsehoods. She's citing some debunked report going back all the way to the bin Laden days as something that the media had concocted and hurt the country as a result. I mean, it's just made up out of whole cloth. And this is coming from the podium at the White House.
And they defend the indefensible. So the president stands up and he says, everybody should have a card to vote. Everybody knows you need one to get groceries. And he just lies
about
it.
Really,
and then she defends it.
You don't need an ID to get groceries, just for the record.
I actually wondered whether he was lying or he was pulling a George H.W. Bush. Could you recall that he didn't know how much a carton of milk was or was stunned when he saw the checkout line in a grocery store? When do you suppose the last time Trump was in an A&P or if they're those things still, if they still exist?
You know, as we all sit around here, we know we believe in the freedom of the press and especially the First Amendment. So when a crowd gets to a rally in Florida and starts saying CNN sucks, okay, they can say CNN sucks. That's their right. They have a right to say that and to condemn the press. But what's happened now, it's the level of vitriol has gotten so high that there is real concern that these reporters are at risk. Acosta goes with a security guard. That's hard to believe. The press needs to be respected, not vilified.
The difficulty is, too, that this is making the president's base happier. They love having this enemy. To succeed, many people have to have an enemy that they can target. And this is what he is doing. And the unfortunate thing is, of course, where are the watchdogs? Where are the people who might stand up for this? Where are the people of integrity in his own party who might say, you need to stop this. Well, they're afraid to because they don't want to have primary challenges. The so-called moderate members of Congress who might stand up and say, you know, Mr. President, you really shouldn't be attacking journalists this way. It's an underlying principle of our democracy that we have a free press. No, they don't care because they're more interested in partisanship than patriotism. And that is the great sin of the time, I think, the politicians who should be the watchdogs on the White House in the face of this mentally ill president who are not doing anything. So we need to hold them to account, I would say, on our opinion pages, being fair to them as we can in our news pages. And I think we bend over backwards to be fair. But it is just a tragic situation. And it's, you may think that it's having an effect. You know, recently in New York State, we just had this instance where our governor, Andrew Cuomo, took a shot at a reporter as though he was questioning the integrity of the reporter. And I wonder if that's not influenced by the tenor of the times that you can get away with that these days. What happened was he was responding to a question from Zach Fink, who's a reporter for the regional cable channel downstate, New York One, which is a part of Charter Spectrum, and the governor's going after Charter. And Zach asked a question following up on a Times Union investigation involving a healthcare network and the Hudson Valley, Crystal Run, about whether the governor would return the $400,000 in donations. And he briefly addressed the substance of the question, and then he turned on at length to talk about the employer of the reporter and said, speaking of fraud, Charter Spectrum has been executing fraud on the people of this state. And then said to the reporter, so you are defrauding the people of the state. That's a fraud. You know, that's an unwarranted attack on the reporter.
It's a page right out of Trumpism. It is.
Yeah.
And he ought to be ashamed of it. But clearly, he's worried about his reelection. And it was a very good question. Should you return $400,000, that's a lot of campaign money from this group, which people have questions about. And instead of just answering it, which he did, he said, well, there's a federal investigation going on and we can't interfere with that.
Right.
And that's his answer.
And to those on the right who believe that the press is in the tank for the left, Cuomo is certainly moderate to left of center by all reasoning.
These days, anyway.
Yeah, these days. Rex, now you let it slid by just quickly. You referred to the president as mentally ill. No, I mean, this is a question that we've raised here and elsewhere. Are we ready to make that leap? We may all suspect that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I get a little bit unbolted on this program.
I don't blame you.
I don't think we'd publish that in an editorial in the Times Union. Yeah. I don't think that would be appropriate. So I'm sorry to the president's partisans, if there are any who might be listening here. We don't know that he's mentally ill. It's just that many people who are professionals in the field have said that he exhibits the apparent symptoms of narcissism. So it could just be.
He just seems unhinged. And each day it seems to be worse and worse as the Mueller probe seems to be narrowing in on him and his tweeting is becoming more frequent and more crazed. And I just don't know where this is going to end. I mean, yeah, Allen's been predicting for a long time that he's going to fire Mueller. And this is not specifically a media issue. You know, what happens to the Mueller probe if he fires Mueller? Does that mean it just stops or does somebody else pick it up?
Well, obviously something will happen. You know, as I have said many times, I don't want to go out on the same exact limb Rex was just on.
Thank you. Yes, I wouldn't.
But I do want to say when a rat's in a corner and somebody attacks it, it's going to bite him, which is why I believe that the Mueller probe that he will go after Mueller. And then the appropriate media question is, what is the media doing?
I was just going to say, this will put the ball, I think, largely in the media's court to pick it up and continue to do its own work and investigate and apply the pressure on this guy.
But the difficulty, of course, goes back to the point that we're discussing. If various elements of the news media are engaged in trying to follow up and get to the truth of what's going on, not just Russian meddling, but the president's financial ties and the corruption that seems to be permeating this administration, the lies that underlie an awful lot of policy choices. If the media does its typical and important watchdog work, there's going to be a huge percentage of people who are going to want to attack us, egged on by the president. And I just don't see, I'm getting unhinged myself. I don't see how this is going to end. I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, it can end one of two ways. We can fall into a form of fascism, which I think there are signs we will go to. And then the press will really see what happens. We had lots of examples of that in the past. when dictators and others take over government, what happens to the press? They go to jail, they get annihilated, they get killed. It's very scary. So when you say you just don't know what'll happen, on the other hand, if he is brought to the Court of Justice by Mueller, and if it leads to impeachment, that would be a whole other outcome.
You know, I agree with Rex that what we need are good leaders to step forward and stand up and say, this isn't right, this is what's right, this is what needs to be done. At least they are not joining the chorus of fake news. I'm grateful for that small gift, but there are millions of people in this country. One person cannot hypnotize the whole world. I think Republicans need to stand up.
It is interesting, Judy, that instead of taking on individual reporters or individual newspapers, he's taken on the press as an institution. He says the whole press is basically corrupt.
And there except for Fox, of course.
Yeah, well, and there are many people who believe him.
That's right, yeah. And it's easy to take on an institution rather than an individual. And everybody has their reason to be angry at the media. Alan often tells the story about asking at a Rotary Club or a Kiwanis, any of you ever been in the media, did they get the story right? And, you know, we make mistakes. Or people perceive that we do also. You know, a lot of times people don't like what they've said to a reporter and they claim to be misquoted. And oftentimes I have to point out that in that conversation, one person was taking notes and one person was not.
I wish I had a dollar for every person who has ever called me in my job at the head of WMZ and says, what should I do? They've just written a story about me and they're asking for my advice. And I'm saying, I always give the same advice, shut up. You know, you can write a letter to the editor if you want to, but that will get another letter to the editor back. You just have to sort of understand that the press has its job to do.
Well, I think we've all experienced this. I know I have. I've been interviewed and had stories written about me or stories in which I was part of, and I can't remember one that I thought was the way I would have written it.
Right.
You want to write it your own way. Now, it doesn't mean they were wrong. It's just not the way I would have written it. And people who are not part of the press, who don't fully understand that process, feel even more strongly and negatively towards the press when that happens to them.
And then there are always these questions about, what are the rules? So I know, Judy, you've laid this out to your reporters in the past. What are the rules? Let's keep this off the record. And the subject says, let's keep it off the record. And the reporter doesn't keep it off the record. And you say, well, you have agreement. And the subject thinks that's despicable.
Well, this is appropriate because in the conversation we've just been having about the publisher of the New York Times, A.G. Sulzberger, breaking the off-the-record promise after the president broke it. And this is Kelly McBride, who is the head of the ethics faculty at the Poynter Institute, has this to say about it. There are two examples of the most common reasons when journalists break the off-the-record promise. First, if the source is proven to be lying, if somebody off-the-record lies to you, that off-the-record promise is off. You can't lie to me off-the-record and expect that I'm going to honor the off-the-record promise. Second, if the source discusses the conversation on the record, which is what the president did, the president revealed what he said were the contents of the conversation, and that's when Sulzberger came back and said, no, no, that's not what we talked about. Here's what we talked about. So those are reasons when the off-the-record promise is changed. So that's
can you imagine Trump's reaction had Sulzberger broken the off-the-record? Then he didn't.
Right.
I mean, it's just incredible that the president of the United States would break that promise regarding a newspaper publisher, many believe the most powerful newspaper publisher in the country.
Or the world.
Or the
amazing.
World.
Donald Trump breaking a promise? Imagine. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith with Judy Patrick and Ira Fussfeld and Alan Shartok, the only professor in the room today, actually. We often have other professors with us.
Just don't forget that.
He just leaves that lie over us. We know it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've talked a lot about social media platforms, notably Facebook. And here's something interesting. You know, Facebook, which has been so much a target of troll networks, Facebook, which arguably changed the course of American history by failing to respond to Russian intrusion into the 2016 presidential race, now has shut down a Russian troll network ahead of the midterms. And I guess the question goes to this. Do we now consider, should there be even more aggressive effort by these social media platforms? Because after all, isn't Facebook the most powerful news media player? I know that Facebook doesn't like to call itself that, but it is a more powerful platform than any of us have. and it is still allowing a lot of untrue, scurrilous stuff on its platform.
Now, the BBC, I believe it was, just did a very good story about foreign governments, particularly in Africa and other places, which are going after the social media and putting taxes on them because they don't like the fact that there are misrepresentations. Now, if we extrapolate that to the press, Rex and Judy and Ira, and say, okay, press, what if they start to tax newspapers because they carry stories that are unhappy for the, you mm-hmm. know, so that we see social media now coming under extraordinary stress in many ways.
You know, and Facebook stepped forward early on, but what about the other social media channels sure. like Instagram? We're not getting any indication of what they're doing, and I must be assured that they are being attacked as well. It's really interesting that what these sites are doing is just trying to sow divisiveness. It's not just far right, it's far left. It's anything that will make people start to go at each other. And while I always appreciate a healthy discussion of issues, this seems to be so mean-spirited.
Well, you know, if we can conflate the old media newspapers with the digital media of the 21st century and equate both of them as publishers, Facebook is a publisher. Well, the newspapers as publishers, if somebody writes a letter to the editor in the newspaper and it's filled with libel or material that's demonstrably false, the newspaper is going to be vigilant and is not going to be printed, even though it's not their information, because they're responsible for what is in their newspaper. And similarly, Facebook and all of these other social media platforms, if they're serious about cleaning them up, they've got to figure out a way to do the same. They've got to review all this material.
Now, in my professorial role, I have lectured all of you time and again on the fact that politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And newspapers and social media are certainly purveyors of scarce resources, are the owners of scarce resources, right?
Less scarce than it used to be. That's the problem.
And we are now hearing, for example, here at public radio, demands from some groups like the Green Party, for example, saying we want to be treated exactly the same way that the Democrats and the Republicans are, and you owe that coverage to us. And of course, there are a lot of other minor parties which are going to say the same thing. Now we're going to come to the debates, and we'll be talking about that. Should they be included? Should it only be the major parties that are included? Should you dilute that message by having everybody on? That's a tough dilemma.
You know, Facebook also has the issue of if they mess with any post, there's some protection from libel under the Federal Communications Act as long as you don't touch the post.
Exactly.
But once they start editing, then they're going to be liable.
Which is why they don't want to be perceived as publishers, why they want to just say, no, we're just a platform. But isn't there a responsibility? You know, on Facebook, Alex Jones, that terrible hate-filled talk radio host, accused Robert Mueller of child rape. And he mimed shooting him. And, you know, Facebook says, no, that doesn't violate our community standards. Really? Falsely accusing a public official of child rape? I couldn't get away with that. That's your point, that we would, I think, that we wouldn't do that. And so where does responsibility come in? Oh, my goodness, we're out of time.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
This program should be now.
There he goes again. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, I'm Rex Smith. Thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Could not bake a cake, ding-ling, ding-ling, ling-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people's fight to wage.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. And Ira Fussfeld is the Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling,
advertising. Get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.